Up next, Design for Change host Sheila Setharaman speaks with Wendy Kopp, founder and executive director of Teach for America. They discuss the growth and success of Teach for America and Kopp's strategies for further expansion from the Conversations Network's Social Innovation Channel.
Hi, I'm Elena Connor.
And I'm Eric Nee. We are your hosts on Social Innovation Conversations, bringing you a new interview in the Design for Change series. A correspondent of the Stanford Center for Social Innovation, Sheila Setharaman, asks accomplished entrepreneurs in the Design for Change interview series about the key elements that enabled them and their organizations to unleash their potential for social and environmental impact. By joining as a paid member of the Conversations Network, you'll not only help keep social innovation conversations on the air, you'll also have access to our premium edition programs without promotional messages. Just click on the Join Now button on our website.
Our audio files are delivered by Limelight Networks, the high-performance content delivery network for digital media. Thank you, Limelight, for your support of the Conversations Network. And now, here's our presentation from the Design for Change interview series.
Welcome to Design for Change, where we talk to entrepreneurs around the world who are creating sustainable models for social change. This is your host, Sheila Setharaman. Our guest today is Wendy Kopp, who started Teach for America in 1990 to address educational inequities in the country. Today, the Teach for America network has grown to 17,000 individuals, and the model is being adopted in several other countries. Wendy, we are thrilled to have you on our show today. Thank you for being here.
Certainly. Excited to be here.
So tell us, Wendy, what does Teach for America do?
Well, Teach for America's mission is to build the movement to eliminate educational inequity, meaning to address what we view as certainly among our society's greatest social injustices, just the fact that where you're born so often determines your educational outcomes and in turn life outcomes. And so our idea is to address that by enlisting our country's most promising future leaders in that effort. And we do that by calling upon our top recent college grads, people from all different academic majors and all different career interests, and asking them to commit 2 years initially to teach in our highest poverty communities, knowing that that experience will both have a significant immediate impact for the kids they reach and also knowing that that teaching experience is a transformative one for them as well, and that it has numerous long-term impacts in terms of influencing the way our future leaders think about educational inequity and deepening their conviction and their insight about the need to address it and how to address it.
Now, you have experienced tremendous growth in the past 15 years. You have reached over 2 million kids through this program. What are some key elements that have helped you scale up the organization?
Probably the first ingredient is just the fact that I think this is an idea that has magnetized just thousands of people. So the fact that, you know, this year 25,000 graduating seniors will compete to enter Teach for America and to teach in our highest poverty communities, that is certainly the enabler right there. I do think, I mean, over time we've learned so much organizationally about how to do this well and how to manage something at a significant scale. And I think, you know, as with anything, so much of this is about developing sufficient organizational capacity and financial capacity to operate at a significant scale. So I think our learnings around that have been important, certainly, as well.
Like many entrepreneurs, you too did not have too many backers when you pitched this idea over 15 years ago. How did you make the vision a reality at that point?
Well, I had a tremendous asset, which was my inexperience and naivete. I just had no idea that this couldn't be done. You know, I mean, people ask me, did you ever envision that Teach for America would grow to this scale? And, you know, the honest answer is I completely did. I thought it would happen in 2 years. You know, I completely envisioned what the outcome. I just had no idea really what it would take. And I think at some level, thank heaven I didn't. So I think that helped. I also think that the timing was perfect in so many ways. And And that it was just one of these ideas whose time had come, you know, and it was, I would tell people the idea and they would say, doesn't that already exist? And it was almost as if I wasn't doing it, someone else would 6 months later. So there were many enablers. Also, as a graduating senior, I had thought of this idea as a college senior and had needed a thesis topic, proposed it in the thesis. And after I turned in the thesis, I sent it out to corporate executives who had been quoted in articles saying that they were committed to education reform. And I got a few meetings with those folks and was trying to get a seed grant. So I was able to get that initial seed grant, which was for $26,000 from an executive from Mobile Corporation. And that enabled me to spend my summer doing nothing but meeting as many people as would meet with me, you know, which wasn't very many people at the time, I must say, but, you know, because, of course, I didn't have a whole lot of credibility. But I would get a few meetings, and one meeting would lead to another. And what I heard in all of those meetings that summer, so I was meeting with potential funders and people in the education community, people in the education reform field, and everywhere I went, people said, you know, they thought this was a great idea. They just didn't think it would work. And the reason they didn't think it would work is that they didn't think that college students would want to teach in low-income communities. And because that was the one thing that I had total conviction about, and had some reason for conviction about, I just decided, okay, we'll show these people, and worked with some other recent grads to launch a grassroots recruitment campaign at 100 campuses. 2,500 people responded within 4 months, and that was really what kicked the ball off, and I think ultimately then it was much easier to attract initially the media attention, the corporate and foundation dollars, and just the help from more experienced teacher educators, and certainly the commitment from school systems to hire them. So 1 year after I graduated, I was looking out on an auditorium full of 489 Teach for America core members, you know, the first core heading into their first year of teaching. And in many ways, I think that's when our learning curve really began. You know, I mean, we realized very quickly how hard it was going to be to actually do this well and in a sustainable way.
But that's an amazing story, and I'm glad your perseverance paid off, because Teach for America is such an important part of the educational landscape today in this country. What are some things you have done to increase brand awareness?
I think probably the biggest thing we've done is actually, I think the brand awareness we have stems so much from our campus recruitment effort. So the fact that we are such a visible presence at so many colleges and universities in our country. I mean, we're recruiting at some level at about 450 schools and really have very high awareness levels on those campuses. We have teams of recruitment staff, two-person teams, about 62-person teams that each take a certain number of colleges and, you know, really source top prospects and meet with them individually. We've met with 27,000 college seniors so far this year to try to persuade them to apply to Teach for America. And I think the awareness among that generation translates too to their parents' awareness. So I actually think that more than anything, you know, which I realize is sort of unique to our particular mission, but I would say that we're just now trying to develop the capacity to increase our public awareness more strategically.
What are some ways in which you are doing that?
Well, the first thing we did was hire a chief marketing officer who has marketing experience at, in this case, Burger King. You know, and she is building a team to take this on. I mean, we're building capacity to have a truly insights-driven marketing effort, meaning, you know, as we think about our key audiences, what do they need to believe in order to, for us to meet our goals? Meaning, you know, what do college students need to believe to decide to join Teach for America? So we base our marketing efforts around a pretty deep understanding of the answer to that question. And hopefully we'll be able to bring that kind of insights-driven approach to other areas as well, as we think about the variety of constituents who need to know Teach for America. So I guess that's one piece of it. We're working to do more to invest in a proactive media effort. We're testing different public service advertising strategies, but haven't settled on an approach there yet. We're investing a lot more in digital marketing using the various technologies to raise awareness. But I would say that we're experimenting with various strategies, and I'm not sure I'm the expert in that field at this point.
You also have a really impressive list of partners, both in the corporate sector and in university and just across the board. How did you secure your first partnerships? Was it easy because people just believed in this, or did you have to do a lot of convincing? And how have you built up the partnerships over time?
You know, I would say that we're pretty purposeful in our partnership building, in the sense that we're working to build partnerships where we know that those partnerships will meet needs that we have and needs that the potential partner has, you know, so that we can build truly mutually beneficial partnerships. And, you know, we do have partnerships with schools of education in each of the communities where we work, and certainly primarily with the school districts, which commit to hire our core members. And certainly we have many funding partnerships. But all of those partnerships really contribute to and are critical to our meeting our goals. And so, you know, we no doubt approach that effort as anyone would, in terms of just identifying who are the best potential prospects, and then we go out and try to explore whether there's a mutual benefit to working together.
You touched upon funding. Where are your sources of funds coming from?
This year, our budget is about $120 million. 70% of that comes from the private sector, and 30% is public. 70% of it is also local, meaning, you know, Teach for America places its core members in now 29 urban and rural communities across the country. And in each of those communities, we have very diversified local funding bases that make it possible for us to recruit and select, train, and support the teachers who are placed in those communities. So locally, we have school district support. We have individuals who sponsor teachers for $5,000. We have corporate and foundation gifts and some state money. And then nationally, we have a federal grant through AmeriCorps, the National Service Program, as well as a federal appropriation and national corporate partnerships, foundations that support special projects, and individuals who make major gifts in support of our work.
Much of the criticism for your model seems to be around the short training period for the core members, and also the requirement that they teach in schools and for just about 2 years. Critics question the effectiveness of this approach. How do you respond to something like that?
I think one of the things that's going on here is that, you know, we're obviously tackling a problem of just enormous magnitude, which has been with us as a country as long as anyone can remember. You know, so we have 13 million kids growing up below the poverty line. They are, by the time they're just in fourth grade, already three grade levels behind. Half of them don't graduate from high school. Those who do are at the eighth grade level, compared with kids in more privileged communities. It's just a huge problem. And, you know, we really believe that deeply entrenched, huge problems demand sometimes some out-of-the-box thinking and solutions. And I think this particular model does run up against traditional paradigms around what the teaching profession should look like, around how teachers are trained. So I think that there's probably no less controversy today than there was when I was trying to get this off the ground around some of those basic premises. And yet, school systems, the school principals who hire our core members, are our biggest champions, which says a lot about, you know, whether or not this actually works. The most rigorous studies that have been done to date show that our core members do, in fact, have a greater impact on their students' achievement than, you know, even veteran and certified teachers in their schools. So I guess the reality is this model is working, but it is also, at some level, maybe it's counterintuitive. But we just think that it's important, because we honestly don't think there's any other way to solve a problem of this magnitude other than by literally generating a true movement of our future leaders to say, okay, we're going to take this on. Just as, you know, in our nation's history, you know, when we face huge challenges, we try to marshal our best talent against those challenges.
And your alumni network is really very strong and effective. Some of them come back to education, others go into policy, and you've talked about how each of them make an impact in their own way to make a difference to the educational landscape. Tell us a little bit more about some examples in that regard.
Many people would say that the impact our alumni have is, you know, perhaps the greatest piece of our impact. And I think it plays out in a couple of different ways. First of all, while fewer than 10% of our incoming recruits say that they would have taught if it weren't for Teach for America, more than 65% of our overall alumni force, 12,000 alumni, are working full-time in education. So the reality is that this experience completely changes their career paths. Many who are not in education are actually working in ways that impact schools and low-income communities. So maybe they go into medicine, but they're practicing in public health, or go into law, and they're practicing in legal services. And we think that is so critical because we won't solve this problem without long-term, sustained, committed leadership from within. And this is a group of people who, even in their, you know, 20s and 30s, are already assuming such significant leadership roles in the fight for change. You know, they're winning some of the highest accolades teachers can win. 2 years ago, the National Teacher of the Year was a Teach for America alum. They're running many of the highest performing schools in low-income communities as principals. They're getting appointed to superintendencies. And at the same time, we actually do believe it's important that some of our people leave, you know, that they leave education, that they go into policy, that they go into business, that they go into journalism, because as much as we need to build the capacity of our schools and school systems, we will never solve this problem from within schools alone, you know, and ultimately need leaders at every level of policy and in every sector who understand that we can solve this problem and have a grounded understanding of how to solve it. And that's really the insight and the perspective that comes from this teaching experience. So I think that's obviously Teach for America's big idea and theory of change and what drives us to get bigger and better, because we know that ultimately, you know, we need to reach the point where not just a few, but many of our nation's leaders have the commitment and insight that comes from having taught successfully in low-income communities.
How have you built and nurtured the network, this alumni network that you talk about? How do you get the information you need to know where they are and what they're doing regarding this work?
Well, we are constantly trying to do better in terms of building a really strong community among them. We certainly do everything we can to keep track of them and know where almost all of them are, and communicate with them via email and whatnot. But, you know, one thing we do is try to build a strong sense of community among them. We're about to launch a new online community that should take us far forward on that front, but also bring folks together for what we call alumni summits. What we found is that having a big annual summit for one day in various regions where alums cluster each year does so much to bring people out, and you know, they're each other's greatest source of inspiration. And so I think bringing them together does so much to sustain their commitment to this work and to give them new ideas, advance their thinking about what they can personally do to move towards our vision of educational excellence and equity. You know, we have alumni journals and e-newsletters and such as well. So that's a part of it. The other piece of it, what we've discovered is, I mean, one of our big priorities is to do more to accelerate the leadership of our alumni, this group of people who we do know has rare conviction and insight. So we want to get them into positions of leadership earlier and have various initiatives to help do that through streamlining the path to the school principalship for them, through supporting them as they run for school boards and other elected offices, through helping them start social enterprises aimed at addressing this problem, and so forth. So those are the two sets of activities that we engage in, really, to foster the leadership of our alums, both community building on the one hand, but also working to help clarify the career paths for them.
Now, there's also a program called Teach for All. which is an ambitious effort to take the model of Teach for America and replicate it in countries around the world. Tell us more about that.
Teach for All really is a response to the initiative of social entrepreneurs and other champions in different countries who have been pioneering the development of this model in their countries. And I just started meeting a number of these folks over the last year and a half and have been so inspired by their deep understanding of and commitment to this particular theory of change, and believe we can do so much to accelerate their impact just by sharing our knowledge base and what we have learned to this point. So Teach for All is an effort to do that. Basically, it's an effort to build a network of organizations that aspire to the same programmatic principles and agree to certain quality control kind of provisions. And as part of that network, Teach for All then helps by sharing its knowledge, Teach for America's knowledge, the systems and tools that we've developed over time, and various other benefits, you know, but that's the driving force, I would say, is to help people not reinvent the wheel, but sort of innovate off of where Teach for America and our colleagues in the UK who've been at this for 5 or 6 years now at Teach First, you know, what we've all collectively learned through this experience.
Where do you see Teach for America 10 years from now?
Well, that is a good question. You know, we've been for the last 7 years on a path to get bigger and better. You know, we've grown significantly in scale. We've grown from 1,000 teachers at any given time 7 years ago to 5,000 teachers today. We'll have 6,500 in the midst of their 2-year commitment this coming year. And we think that there's much more growth potential. At the same time that we've grown, we've done so much to increase the effectiveness of our teachers and to foster the leadership of our alums. So I would see us continuing on this path as far as we can take it. We should continue to grow, continue to become more and more effective in terms of the impact that each core member and each alum has. And there may be, hopefully, Teach for All will thrive. You know, we would be thrilled to play a role in supporting the development of this model in many, many other countries around the world. And at the same time, there may be other possibilities as well in terms of sharing our knowledge base more broadly. But those are the focuses at this point.
Before we go, tell us a few stories from the field, things that really make the difference for people.
Right. I could tell so many different stories. You know, I think Teach for America is at a particularly exciting juncture right now. And it's because, you know, we can see real evidence in the communities where we've been working for a decade or more that this effort does catalyze fundamental change. And I could tell the stories of any number of communities from Oakland, California to Newark, New Jersey to New Orleans to Houston, Texas. I think about our nation's capital, you know, which is at some level a dramatic story right now in that, you know, here we have in our nation's capital one of the most extreme achievement gaps in our country. And we've been working there since 1991. We've placed about 50 teachers a year there for most of that time. And so many people in Washington, D.C. have just thrown up their hands at the problems in the public school system. But as of a few months ago, you know, there's such a new day in Washington, D.C., and in huge part, it's because the mayor took over the school system and appointed a new schools chancellor, and he appointed a woman named Michelle Rhee, who is a Teach for America alum, a 37-year-old woman who herself is a teacher, moved a class of kids from the 13th percentile against the national norm to the 90th percentile. She worked with the same class of kids for 2 years. And so she is both a rare talent, but she also just deeply understands that we can solve this problem. You know, she has such conviction based on that experience, and as a result is just, you know, uniquely relentless. And beyond Michelle, her deputy chancellor is a Teach for America alum, many of the members of her senior team in the school district, 10% of the school principals in Washington, D.C. are Teach for America alums, one of the two right hands to the mayor for education policy, one of the two newly elected school board members. What I think, the hope we take from this example and from others like it in other communities across the country is just that every single person I just mentioned in this picture came through when we were bringing in 500 teachers a year nationally versus this past year, 3,000, this year soon to be, you know, almost 4,000. And we just know that we're going to see our impact grow exponentially over the coming years just as a function of this effort to get much bigger and also to do much more to support and ensure the success of our core members and alumni. So we're at a point where we feel like there's just huge potential to have a fundamental impact on the problem we're addressing, which gives us new motivation every day.
Well, we wish you all the very best for your efforts, and you are a great inspiration to entrepreneurs everywhere. It's an honor having you on the show today, and thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much.
This is your host, Sheila Sethuraman, and you were listening to Design for Change.
If you like this interview, visit Design for Change online at www.sic.conversationsnetwork.org for more interesting conversations with social entrepreneurs. Find out how they designed and run their organizations for social and environmental change.
By joining as a paid member of the Conversations Network, you'll not only help keep social innovation conversations on the air, you'll also have access to our premium edition programs without promotional messages. Just click on the Join Now button on our website.
Our audio files are delivered by Limelight Networks, the high-performance content delivery network for digital media. Thank you, Limelight, for your support of the Conversations Network.
The post-production audio engineer for this program was Mike Seifried. Our website editor was Peter Christensen. The series producer is Sheila Sethuraman.
This is Eric Nee, and I hope you'll join us next time for another Design for Change interview.